time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you all. It's Tuesday, the 7th of March. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up on the show this evening, I'll have all the latest updates from the Enterprise Awards that are taking place this week across Leash, Offaly and Westmeath, and plus an update on some of the events that are still happening and still going to happen for the rest of the week as part of Enterprise Week 2023. Also, what impact is indirect communication having in Irish workplaces? And do we say sorry more than any other English-speaking countries? You're probably nodding in agreement already, but anyway, I have some fascinating insights coming up a little bit later from Julie O'Sullivan of Jigsaw Better Business on that. Think of all those shoulda, woulda, couldas, things that are said in meetings and promised that are never going to happen or were never intended to happen, and then think what it might be like to come from a different culture and try to fit in with that system. So as I say, fascinating stuff coming up on that a little bit later too. Also, with tomorrow being International Women's Day, we're going to put a focus on females in the jobs market. And did you know that women will only apply for a job if they have 100% of the skills and experience on the job description, whereas men will apply if they have around 60%. So what other factors swing the jobs market in favour of men? We'll have some extensive analysis by Yasmin Al-Kirshi of Local Enterprise Award winners Allpro Recruitment in about 15 minutes' time. If you want to get in touch with me here on the show this evening, as always, you can do so by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103, powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. But to begin this evening, four Irish companies have been added to the Financial Times FT 1000 list of fastest-growing companies in Europe. The league table ranks companies according to their growth rate over a four-year period, and this is the seventh year that the table has been published. Craft canning company Bevcraft was the top performing Irish company on the list, appearing for a second consecutive year as it continues to expand its operations across Europe. From their Mullingar HQ, they now operate and have teams based in Ireland, the UK, Netherlands and Norway, and they are serving hundreds of innovative craft beverage producers across Europe with a comprehensive range of canning, digital print, laboratory, distribution and ancillary services. An absolute success story for the Midlands if ever there was one. However, another Mullingar-based company also features on the list. Zoosh Digital have been placed an impressive 423rd on that very, very prestigious list. Zoosh Digital are a cloud-native technology specialist. They work with businesses of all sizes and sectors to digitalise, create and develop game-changing ideas. To find out more what that means and what they have done to achieve such recognition, I am delighted to be joined by the co-founder of the Zoosh Group, Mervyn Graham. Mervyn is a Clara man. He now lives in Longford and, would you believe, once treaded the corridors of Midlands 103, I think a few years ago. Would that be fair to say, Mervyn?
Good evening, Ronan. Thanks for having me in. Yes, it is indeed true. And as I explained to you when you called me just a few moments ago, that I've had butterflies all day at the thoughts of being over the airways with you this evening.
Not at all. I think you're going to be an old hand at this. But anyway, look, let's get back to the real important thing here. Can you introduce us to Zoosh Digital and even the Zoosh Group as well, and just talk about how it came about first and kind of what the core objectives and what the goal for it was when you first got together and founded it?
Indeed, I'd be delighted to do that. So I wish I could tell you that for Zoosh Digital in particular, we had this grand plan to feature on the FT Fastest 1000 Companies in Europe list. But that's not the case at all. I'd be lying to you. At the genesis of Zoosh, so we basically have this Zoosh Group thing, which is a bit of a monster at this point in time. We started out with Zoosh Ventures, and the whole idea was to really support great entrepreneurs to realize the potential of their digital ambitions. So really to help probably non-technical co-founders to create a technology that is cloud native, bring it to market after validating it, help them to design it, to build it, deploy it, operate it, maintain it, and ultimately to build their own teams. And we did this with a venture capital twist. So we would invest into those companies and help them to build those products. But what we noticed was that we couldn't find really good skills on the market to help with this sort of innovation, having a real commercial slant, design-led technology methodology. So what we did was we built a population of skilled individuals to help with this early stage innovation. And out of it was born Zeus Digital. Over time, we discovered that there was quite a marketplace for the innovation formula we'd pulled together, not only with startup companies, but with grown-up companies too.
And when did the venture first come together? When did you first officially set it up?
Yeah, so we officially started around 2015 with the Zeus Ventures organization. And since then, we've created a portfolio of 14 cloud-native startup companies that thankfully exist today also. They've survived the pandemic. And Zeus Digital really wasn't a thing until around 2017, 2018, when we started to really sell services out to the broader market. And in terms of UK and Ireland, it really only became a feature in 2018 and into 2019 when we started to focus on developing the business here.
It kind of really puts in perspective the achievement that you've got by being listing on the FT 1000 list after such a short space of time. But those 14 companies that you mentioned, what types of areas are they involved in? Like, are there certain kind of technologies, is there a certain type of startup that really catches your attention?
Indeed. When it comes to the venturing side of the business, it's really in the business-to-business or B2B area, really cloud-native proposition. So really a digital product that would have an associated scalable revenue model. So either transactional or subscription-based or consumption-based model.
And your own kind of your own approach to it then, like, do you look at investing or getting that capital into the companies? Are you looking at a relatively quick exit, or are you prepared to kind of stay on board? Like, do you take any role in the actual management of those companies?
Indeed. So kind of all of the above. So I think the thing that made us different was that we would invest in these companies very, very early. So they wouldn't be ready at all for a traditional VC who really want to see some traction within the business, that you have a product, you have a product market fit, you want to scale the business leveraging their capital. For us, we would get in very early when you had merely an idea and perhaps a founder who had no wherewithal in terms of getting off the ground. We would invest into those companies to help them to bring on board the first hires, but also we would then design for them the entire solution from a user experience point of view, an architecture in the cloud that supports their business model in an optimized sense. Bring that proposition to market with them, get the first customers on board, ultimately then help them to build out their team to become completely self-sufficient and maximize the value in those companies. But I think where this gets interesting for Zeus Digital, Ronan, is that, you know, we started out working with your individual entrepreneurs, but we figured out that large corporates, in fact, have the same sort of challenge, but it's a little bit different. They may have cash, but they're not a software company. They may realize that they need to transform their business, to modernize it, digitally transform it, but they don't know how. So they need all the ingredients that we would apply to a startup company to help them to modernize their business and generate new scalable sources of revenue, leveraging the power of cloud.
And I think people, the listeners, will see that, you know, borne out by, if you look at what the big banks are recruiting now, it's all people in software and data analytics, and that's applying to all those big organizations, that they have to make that shift as well. Before we get back to the FT1000, how well prepared do you think is your standard Irish SME for digitalization? Is it something that's just coming onto the horizons now, or is it a bit more advanced? You know, from your own perspective, how would you rate?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it probably depends on the sector, really. Yeah. I see a lot of movement in the retail sector. A lot of companies have been introducing some form of digital commerce into the equation and leveraging that to engage with customers in a new way. We've seen many projects ourselves where we're bringing intelligence, even AI, into the customer engagement cycle for e-commerce online, and with businesses that might have been considered very traditional, like even selling hops to craft breweries, you know, and selling bespoke computer hardware systems, and really harnessing chatbots and AI to really engage in a new scalable way with their audiences. And then there are other sectors that I think would be slower to move and maybe follow regulations more than an innovation kind of ethos.
Absolutely. But again, the opportunities that present itself from digitalization are there. And I think really companies, it needs to be certainly on the horizon and part of their strategic plans at this point in time. But when it comes to getting the ranking on the FT1000, there must be a huge sense of pride in that. How do you go about getting that? Now, I know you can apply for it. It's an extensive application process. But to be ranked in the top 1,000 is a huge achievement and no doubt came with a lot of hard work.
It did. Yeah, absolutely. You know, actually, it's funny because if we go back quite some years, Ronan, and reflect on my own youth, I'd say there were two defining moments that perhaps led me to this point in time as an individual. I received a Commodore 64, if you're familiar with the machine.
I got one myself one Christmas, yes. Yeah. Fabulous machine.
There you go. Yeah, so Santa also graced me with one of those when I was a young fellow, and I found this booklet that came with it with the title Basic on the front, and I realized eventually that this was a coding language and tutorial manual. So I would test myself with typing and writing code on that machine, and it meant so much to me. I'd always put it back into the box after I was finished with it, and to this day I still have it. So it really did mean something. The other defining moment, in fact, it involves Midlands Radio 3, which it was back then, or Midlands 103, as you are now. There was a man called Philip Finlay Bryan who was in for an interview, and he would have started the first web authoring company in the Midlands called Midnet. And he was in for an interview, and I sat in the studio listening to him, fascinated about website creation and bespoke hardware units and so on. I asked if I could go to his office, and he said, no problem, and I got myself another weekend job there as a teenager, you know, and so that set the course for computer science and software for myself. But you're right, you know, it was a long journey getting here. It didn't happen necessarily by accident. We also didn't plan this entirely. But, you know, I think to a certain extent, COVID also woke many organizations up to the need to digitalize with remote workforces and having digital solutions in your hand, and demand for our skill set increased. So if you look at 2019 into 2020, our business grew 159% year on year, you know, and we continue to double the business year on year. We continue to double the headcount. And I think we exactly doubled the number of customers over the course of 2 years that we had in the business and were completing projects for. So, yeah, I think, you know, even the pandemic perhaps woke people up to the power and need for cloud solutions.
Absolutely. I think it also woke the consumer up and the whole thing around user experience and getting your product in front of people, but giving them access to it, you know, in a quick and efficient way. I think there was a huge awakening for a lot of people as well. Those growth rates you're talking about there, can they continue? And indeed, you know, where does the next couple of years, like where do you see Zoosh Digital and Zoosh Ventures in the next 2 years?
Absolutely. So we've kind of been redesigning the blueprint for Zoosh Digital in recent times. We appreciate and certainly like featuring on the Deloitte Top 50 going back 2 years ago and the FT1000 now. I mean, really, I suppose, awakened us to the fact that Zoosh Digital as a proposition has a lot of potential in its own right. We need to give it the focus and all the enablers that it requires to be what it can be. We've just installed a new CEO in January. I took one of my hats and I'm grateful for that. We're focusing on certain industries. Like in the startup area, we're agnostic, you know, and we remain such. But we see a lot of potential in the area of smart, sustainable logistics and indeed in fintech, where a lot of digitization is happening and needs to happen.
Absolutely, yeah, huge opportunities out there potentially as well. A very brief one just before you finish, Mervyn. The whole venture capital scene out there, is it still as vibrant as ever? Like, have we kind of got over the initial shocks maybe of the invasion in Ukraine and coming out of COVID as well? Is it still a sector, it's still an area that remains very strong? And is Ireland as attractive as it ever was?
I'd say that capital certainly has been bottled up. I'm not sure that appetite for risk and certainly early stage companies have come around at the levels that they were pre-pandemic. And also, I don't know that there are too many actors in the venture capital area that would generally deal with very, very early stage companies like ourselves. They usually require a company with traction and ability to scale with a cash injection. So I'd still say there's some room to to get back to where we were. There's still some distance to go there.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds like from a group perspective, though, you have all the kind of keys and all the ways to make that pathway smooth for people. If you've got 14 companies that are still going, the future looks very bright indeed. Mervyn, it's been an absolute pleasure having you back on the airwaves. We'll get you back in the corridors here sometime very shortly, because undoubtedly there's much more to come on the Zoosh story.
Thank you very much, Ron. It's been an absolute pleasure. Good luck to you.
Likewise, Mervyn. That's Mervyn Graham there, the co-founder of Zoosh Ventures. Zoosh Digital, of course, were ranked in the top 1,000 fastest growing companies in Europe by the Financial Times recently. Phenomenal achievement. And two companies from Mullingar are a feature on that list. Bevcraft as well. Just four Irish companies made the list. Two are in the Midlands. Look, it just goes to show that what I'm always saying in this show, there's great stuff happening in the Midlands, and I love telling you all about it. Anyway, lots more to come this evening, including Irish people. We say sorry an awful lot, don't we? We use words like would, should, maybe, might. But what impact does that have in a business context? We'll find out in a little bit later on the show. Yasmin El-Kersi from All Pro Recruitment is with me in studio, and tomorrow is International Women's Day, and Yasmin has some really interesting statistics and perspectives on recruitment and job roles, and particularly how job roles are written and how they can be off-putting for so many women. So I say some fascinating stuff coming up. But before that, I'm just going to bring you and play a little bit of an episode of Father Ted. This happened to be on my TV a couple of weeks ago, and I just listened to it and I said, maybe I might use that tonight. So anyway, here it goes. Have a listen and just tell me, has anything changed? 083 3010 103 for comments and complaints.
Okay, all right. I suppose that's the least we can do. Anyway, we can discuss it with the solicitor.
I am the solicitor.
No, you're not.
I'm sorry, but I'm the senior partner in Corliss, Corliss and Sweeney.
Now, come on now. Just because we're from the island, you think you can have a bit of fun with us?
I assure you.
All right, all right. The big tickles from the island. But we're not as thick as we look, eh? No way, Jose.
Now, wait a second. Why do you think I've been talking to you for the last hour and a half?
Look, you're a lovely girl, but I really think we should talk to the solicitor.
If you're a solicitor, I'm Boy George.
Karma, 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 chameleon. You come and go.
Needless to say, Father Dougal got served up his just reward there. And now I must point out, the first giggle in that clip is actually Pauline McLean playing Mrs. Doyle. So it wasn't just the men laughing at the female solicitor. Yasmin El-Kersi is the marketing manager at All Pro Recruitment. Yasmin, surely things have changed out there though.
I mean, there are a lot more female solicitors for sure. But look, I mean, we're still here in the... Is the jobs market totally fair? Not at higher positions. No, it isn't, like, at this moment. But yeah, it's a good clip that shows we have come a long way, but there's still a long way to go.
You would like the things. I mean, that clip is probably 20 years old. Yeah. And again, I think the tongue-in-cheek piece at the end of it as well, when they got their comeuppance. But you've sent us some statistics there today, like in ahead of International Women's Day tomorrow. It's proven out there by research that women will only apply for a job if they've 100% of the skills and experience on the description, whereas men will apply if they've about 60%. So what's happening there? Is that just a behavioural thing, or is that, again, do people need to look at how they write these job descriptions?
Yeah, like if you're looking at a market now, and like I was talking to you earlier, we're at full employment, okay? You have 30.7% of women in Ireland are working part-time. So if you're looking to attract women into your workplace, you need to be really careful about your job description. Because like you say, so 100% of all the qualifications and experience they'll need to look for. Now, so many jobs descriptions are full of things of nice to haves, you know. It's like, you know, you want someone to, I don't know, to be a solicitor, but it'd be nice if they were also, you know, an expert in something else and something else. So the real thing here is, if you are looking to level the playing field and you're looking to, you know, to recruit equally, do just put in exactly what you want.
Those nice to haves, are they more maybe a reflection on the hiring company not maybe fully knowing exactly what they want? Is that, there's obviously a few factors at play here.
Yeah. And I mean, you can understand why an employer wants, you know, obviously we all want to have the best talent. But like, interestingly enough, is that women don't tend to exaggerate. So, for example, in job interviews, and there's a lot of research done, women don't tend to exaggerate in a job interview of what they've done. And they actually tend to do the opposite. They tend to downplay and appear like they're, you know, part of the team and we did this and we did that and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Whereas men are much more likely to do that. If you take that back into the job description area, so they may have done a lot of this stuff, but they'll probably say, ah, sure, I had a bit of help, or, oh, they don't take the full responsibility.
In designing job ads, you're also suggesting that they should be more gender neutral. And actually, there's certain words and phrases that people should bin. Now, some people listening might be surprised to hear of some of the words you're probably going to throw at us here. But again, just to be mindful of what you're writing, what pops up in job descriptions?
Like stuff like, we're looking for a rock star. We're looking for, a superstar, aggressive, all these words. Like when I say those words, they're not really words you would associate with women, right? They're quite like male words. And so they would put, I'm sure the person who's writing the job description doesn't even think about this and they're just trying to write a jazzy kind of eye-catching job description. But what you're actually doing is you're alienating half the people that could be applying for the job, and they're thinking, oh, this isn't the organisation for me.
At AllPro, how do you then ensure that your jobs are gender neutral and that they're actually targeting the entire potential market and not just, as you say, eliminating over half of the market?
Yeah. So again, it's about the wording. We don't have the final say on what goes in a job description, but we do work with our clients and we do work with them to say, okay, well, is this an actual thing that's 100% necessary in this job description? And we try to eliminate a lot of the kind of, as I say, the nice to haves. And the other thing then is when we advertise, we're always trying to get, like, I'm the marketing manager, so when I have photos up on social media, I'm trying to have photos of men, of women, of people from different nationalities. Like, it's part of our policy to make sure that we're inclusive and diverse.
And I suppose it's not just a copy and paste job and do what other people are doing as well, kind of keep all those factors in mind.
Yeah.
When it comes down to things like, for example, say a salary negotiation, do these same kind of characteristics, or does something change in the meantime that if a female has to go and negotiate a salary, all of a sudden she knows exactly what her worth is and therefore negotiations are strong? Or does some of that kind of maybe lack of confidence continue?
Yeah, so actually, and I don't think it's that women don't know their worth. I think they do know their worth. And I think that's probably why a lot of them are exiting the workplace and going to part-time work when they have children and, all of a sudden life becomes busy and they need to reprioritize. I think what happens is it's actually really interesting. So women are 4 times less likely to negotiate their starting salary in their very first job than men are. 4 times. Research is indicating that equates to about €500,000 in lost earnings over the lifetime of your career. And they're way less likely to negotiate salary increases as they go along in their career. And that would equate to, and there's a lot of research on this, and they all say it comes down to about 1 million to 1.5 million of lost earnings in the lifetime of your career for not negotiating your salary. And then the crazy thing about that is you're saying, well, then just negotiate your salary, right? That's what you're thinking. But Harvard Business Review Business School has done massive research, 2,500 participants on women and negotiations of salary for women. And what they found is that when women assertively negotiate their salary, they're 3 times more likely than a man to reach an impasse. And so that means that they're not getting the salary increase at all, or they're not getting the job, actually. And it's irrelevant of whether the interviewer is male or female. And so what they found is that when women assertively negotiate their salary, they're seen as hard to work with, aggressive, difficult, all these kind of things. Whereas when men do the same thing, that doesn't even apply.
You said there, whether it's a male or female interview yeah. At that point,
that's amazing, isn't it? It is amazing. And it just shows you. And that's what I'm saying about even the job description on all this. It comes down to really women are, how would I say, in a culture where it's been nice and, easy going to work with and friendly and all those kind of things are very positive attributes to women. Whereas, if a It's assertive or aggressive. You know, it's assertive if a man does it, but it's an aggressive if a woman does it. And then, interestingly enough, is Reddit and there's some other companies, they've actually taken, because of this and because of the gender pay gap, which is, I mean, what this ultimately ends up, you know, contributing towards, is they've taken salary negotiations totally out of the hiring process. So the price is, you know, the salary is the salary, and they've done that just to quash the biases that obviously are there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would appreciate that in any case. That I know a lot of professionals who will not look at a job description if it doesn't have some indication of the salary on it. But that, I think that applies to nearly everyone as well.
Yeah.
But like, look, you mentioned the gender pay gap. I mean, if you start off, you know, behind, say, the equivalent male at starting salary, it's a bit like looking for, you know, maybe an index linked pay rise with your customer, or price increase with your customers year on year.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that for 10 years and then all of a sudden you go back looking for 30%, you're probably told where to go quite quickly. And I assume the same applies with salaries. But the gender pay gap is still a challenge. Probably see differences, though, between the larger multinationals versus the smaller SMEs as well. I know only the big companies at the minute are required to report that gender pay gap.
And that'll change, actually. So it'll start. So at the minute, the law is saying, and it'll come out this year, is if you have 250 employees, then you have to report your gender pay each year now. But I think it's in next year, they'll start to be at 150 employees. So like, it will start to become a thing that we'll all know about it. Just so you know, the gender pay gap is, according to PwC in 2022, is 12.6%. I mean, how a lot of people would calculate it is, it means that from the 8th of November every year until the end of the year, women are effectively working unpaid. So that's what they mean by the equal pay day, compared to their male counterparts.
But I know firsthand from doing the show for over 5 years now, I mean, there are absolutely amazing female entrepreneurs, females at all levels of businesses right across the Midlands here, across the country indeed. Yeah. So those stories are there. Like, these women, these role models are there. So what's the missing piece? Are we just not hearing enough from them? Why is this still an issue, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think, like, and it's one of the things that I think that a lot of employers and businesses should do is, if they have female success stories within them, they should really sing it from the rooftops. Because, you know, that you know, in sport, you see it a lot, women in sport. And it's, if you can see it, you can be it.
Yes.
And I think that's a huge thing. But I also think, I mean, the truth is that as you get to a certain level in your career, and all of a sudden you're behind in your pay to your male counterparts, I'm sure you start to feel a bit fed up, let's be fair. And then you have kids and life gets super busy. Like, so I was saying earlier, 30.7% of women are working part-time in Ireland. Like, that's huge.
Yeah, but also, as you say, at a time when it's a full employment, there's huge opportunity there as well for people. So maybe the way people look at tailoring those ads, doing those job descriptions, you know, the way you structure packages could be the difference between at least getting attention and getting those applications in. Undoubtedly, a company like AllPro will be well situated to help people there. I believe congratulations are in order. You picked up a local enterprise award in Offaly yesterday for the Business Strategy Award. Congrats to all. That
must
have been a nice way to start a week.
It was absolutely fantastic. What a way. And we had the most beautiful day out in the Tullamore Court Hotel.
That's important as well. Yasmin, let people know how they can find out more about AllPro, please.
Yeah. We're at www.allprorecruitment.ie, and you can call us or email us at info@allprorecruitment.ie, and we're happy to help out. Yeah.
And another big shiny award added to the trophy cabinet there as well. Before I let Yasmin go, looking at an email I received just before the show, actually, is from iReach Insights. They carry out surveys on behalf of certain business groups and lobbying groups as well. It says over half, 54% of adults think women have to overperform in the workplace to get the same recognition as men. And it says 49% of workplaces who are running events for International Women's Day have organised motivational or keynote speakers. But 2 in 3 adults, that's 64% of us, think women carry a huge guilt burden when they have to take time off to look after sick children. And 42% of women think having children has affected their career path. So those figures and those stats aren't really changing as well. As Yasmin says, maybe time to get those stories out there and get those role models really out front and centre too. As I say, I come across them every week here on Taking Care of Business. The stories are there, so I think we just need to do more to get them out as well across all channels and just show people that the role models are there, and let's close that gap and let's just all work in harmony and peace. Yasmin, thank you so much for that. Talk to you again soon. How many times a day do you hear the word would, or sorry, or maybe, or yeah, we should? Apparently, we in Ireland hear it more often than any other English speakers, particularly the word sorry. So what impact does indirect communication have in our workplaces? And you often wonder, how does somebody from a different culture fit in with all the shoulda, wouldas, couldas, and the amount of times a day that we all seem to say sorry? To find out more about this, I'm delighted to be joined by Julie O'Sullivan from Jigsaw Better Business. Julie, this is probably a topic that most people, when they hear it mentioned, they probably go, yeah, that's a thing. But are probably very unaware of the impact it can have in the workplace. What are the kind of key findings of what you know about this whole area of indirect communication?
Yeah, absolutely, Ronan. Yeah, we do tend to have more polite and indirect speech, which you might be thinking is a bit of a positive. It can definitely be helpful in building relationships, but yeah, it definitely can have those negative consequences in the workplace. One of the impacts might be passive aggression. So we're indirectly expressing negative emotions, you know, for example, saying things like, oh, it's fine, or suit yourself, you know, kind of conveying that something's not quite right, but not directly saying that. And when you're on the receiving end of that, it can feel quite uncomfortable. It might mean that you're spending more time wondering about what the person really means rather than actually addressing the issue. I really think that feedback should be a normal part of work. I think in an ideal workplace, everyone should feel able to share any questions or comments or concerns, you know, flag if there's any issues or any room for improvement. But that's often not the case. And when that feedback culture is less common, it can mean that standards of work can be reduced. You know, the quality starts to become eroded, and that can lead to even health and safety issues and more serious consequences. So I definitely think it's a really important thing to look at developing.
But Irish people don't like feedback in work. We all know that, Julie. Come on.
Exactly. And I think the first step really is kind of becoming aware of that, you know, because I think like many cultural features, we don't really fully see it until it's pointed out to us. You know, there's that saying, fish can't see water. It's a metaphor that we can't really see what we're immersed in until we're taken out of it.
And of course, it is that whole thing of people saying yes to your face and then actually doing something totally different, particularly maybe after a meeting or kind of a consensus being achieved at a meeting, although it's not really consensus. Everyone's just kind of agreed with somebody in order to end the meeting, to get back out, and therefore maybe start the whole kind of bitching out in the corridors then about each other and about your colleagues and everything else as well. So what do the best companies do to overcome that and to really work on the communication between their team members? And because I assume to make trust is a huge part of this too.
Yeah, absolutely. And like what you just described there, you know, it's creating that kind of toxic work culture that, you know, people aren't able to do their best work if those kinds of things are happening. So, yeah, like you say, what the best companies are doing is, yeah, really consciously creating this environment where, you know, there is trust and people, there's those clear expectations that everyone is expected to have a voice and to use it, you know, that it's not a personal attack if someone speaks up with any kind of disagreement or if they challenge the status quo. It's not necessarily something that comes naturally, and that's, again, it's normal. We want to fit in, we want to kind of get along, but we tend to express our thoughts and feelings in some way. So, you know, maybe through your body language or your tone of voice. So we might as well do it effectively and skillfully. So I think it's really developing that skill of being able to be assertive, which is that skill of being able to be direct without being destructive. And I think another useful thing is, you know, even trying to reframe the way that, you know, direct communication or feedback is thought of. So rather than seeing it as something that's rude or damaging to your relationship, you can reframe it as a sign of respect. You know, you're showing respect to the person for their time, for their work. You're showing that you care about them, about their work, because if you didn't care, you probably wouldn't go to the trouble of giving them the feedback. So, you know, it's just really trying to reframe, okay, this is actually a helpful, beneficial thing. You know, if you were underperforming, would you rather get tough feedback now? Or would you rather everyone smiles in your face and you end up losing your job in 6 months' time because you were underperforming? You know, I think most people, even if it's tough in the moment to hear a bit of criticism or a bit of feedback, most people would want to know and be able to improve. So it's really kind of about focusing on, you know, if something's gone wrong, you blame the process, not the people.
Absolutely. And actually, most of our kind of HR processes and that are written around that in employment law, that you have to at least make somebody aware of it to begin with before you can go about looking at, you know, give them an opportunity to improve the performance. But I don't think it's the case in a lot of places too. But that whole area of pretty the difference between task and interpersonal conflict, like, is it fair to say that a lot of the conflict in a workplace is interpersonal and not task-based? And that in itself is probably the biggest issue.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on the workplace, you know, but it is just even recognizing that there are those different kinds of conflict. You know, interpersonal conflict tends to be unhelpful. That's the kind that it is very personal. You know, people will probably be thinking about it even after they finish work. Whereas task conflict, you know, there's able to be debate and discussion on what's the best way to solve a problem or make a decision. And that kind of task conflict can lead to better quality decisions. And I would definitely encourage that bit of debate, especially for complex problems. And one of the ways that companies do this sometimes is, you know, even building in time into a meeting for kind of dissent or disagreement, right? So, okay, we've all agreed on this. Okay, now let's try and tear it apart. Let's see what potential problems we might run into, or what would we say if we were being the devil's advocate, you know? So really kind of having that bit of debate and task conflict.
And trying to avoid saying sorry and all those other kind of words too.
Exactly.
Do we see the landscape changing though, with so many American and different nationality multinationals now setting up in the country? Do they bring an element of their own corporate culture and therefore this is less of an issue in those companies? Or is it just such an Irish thing that they just cannot get away from it?
Yeah, well, it's something that I think that, you know, obviously Ireland and both the people and the companies are becoming much more diverse and multicultural. But we still do have to, you know, even if an American company comes here, they're still probably working with a predominantly Irish workforce here. So we can't completely just change overnight. And that's not what we would want to do. You know, we don't want to just say, you know, you have to be a completely different person and fit into a completely different culture. But like that, it's just developing those skills of being able to communicate more effectively. And, you know, there's also then personality differences, right? So like some people are probably listening into this going, you know, that doesn't really apply to me. I'm very comfortable saying exactly what I feel. You know, I'm very naturally assertive. And that's great, but I won't let you off the hook. I think the development area there might be, you know, to pause before actually responding and really trying to listen to other people so that you can understand them and, you know, seeking to understand them first rather than just always speaking your mind first, right? So, you know, if you are that type of person that always speaks your mind first, you might give others the impression that you're not really listening to them or that you think your opinion is more important than theirs, which means that they might be then less likely to listen to you. So in that case, even if you are being really clear and direct and stating your message very clearly, no one's listening, so it doesn't really matter.
Absolutely, it is. It's a potential minefield as well. But when it comes to creating that kind of that winning culture or a fearless culture, as I know Jigsaw would refer to it as, what are the key steps to doing that? And what's a typical role that Jigsaw would play in that process?
Yeah, so I think it is just, like we said, becoming aware of, you know, the natural strengths in each individual and each team, and then really consciously, you know, setting the trust and the expectations that everyone has a voice, trying to respond productively to, you know, failures or challenges, and trying to, you know, just foster that curiosity and appreciation. And again, like we mentioned about becoming aware of the different kinds of conflict and the different types of failure. So it is something that we do work with teams and leaders. So like you say, building that more fearless culture where candid conversations about tough issues can take place, and so the standards can continuously improve. We do that sometimes in a group setting with a team, or we might work one-to-one with a leader who can then develop both their assertiveness and their empathy skills. So those would kind of be the main ways we work on that.
And don't start the whole process by asking your employees, would you like feedback? You have to be a little bit more assertive than that, one would say. And I can just imagine so many people probably falling down at that first step. You know, would you like a bit of feedback? Ah, no, thanks, you're grand.
Yeah.
Sorry, no. Do you want me to take feedback? Oh, I can just see. I think I've probably heard those conversations played out in workplaces in the past. But for now, Julie O'Sullivan from Jigsaw Better Business, thank you so much for that insight this evening. And all the very best.
Thanks so much, Ronan. It's been a pleasure.
Julie is Head of People Development at Jigsaw Better Business, and she's a chartered organisational psychoanalyst as well. So have you, you know, do you spot those conversations? Do you have those conversations every day in work? And having listened to Julie now, have you spotted something, or have you kind of gone, oh, yes, that is actually happening? And are you now tuned into the benefits of proper feedback and assertiveness in the right way, and that proper good conflict in the workplace, you know, task-based conflict, not interpersonal conflict. Nobody wants that. There's no need for that at all, but task-based conflict. And if you get your business to that point, great things will happen. This week is National Enterprise Week, and a huge range of events taking place every day this week, hosted by your local enterprise offices of Laois, Offaly and Westmead. And this week also the local enterprise awards are being handed out. Yesterday in Offaly there was the awards pointed out in many categories as well. Glass Innovations Limited, care of Gretchen Donovan, were the overall winner of the 2023 Offaly County Enterprise Award. They received the top award and a trophy and a cash prize of €1,500. They'll now go on to represent Offaly and local enterprise office Offaly at the national awards in June. Other winners in Offaly were Dangan-based Anthony Gorman of Anthony's Wooden Crafts Limited. Anthony won the One to Watch Award. And if you remember, Anthony was out with me just before Christmas with his fantastic reindeers and the other products that he's working on too. As you'd have heard earlier in the show, Tullamore-based All-Pro Recruitment Limited were winners in the Best Our Business Strategy. Clara-based Irish Training Solutions Limited also won the Export Award, and NIS Limited and Rahan took away the Innovation Award. Awards were held in Westmead today as well. The big winner there was Watt Footprint. It's from Mullingar, and it was the overall winner of the Local Enterprise Award in Westmead. It was founded by Paul O'Reilly, and they took the top prize of €5,000, and they will of course go on to represent Westmead in the national finals in June. They offer a one-stop shop approach, delivering energy savings from initial energy audit and delivery of upgrades to the measurement and verification of the savings. Great stuff happening there with a lot of Westmead businesses too. Huge range of events, as I say, taking place right across the region over the next couple of days. If you go online, local enterprise office / and then Laois, Offaly or Westmead, you get a range of the various mentoring clinics, the webinars. There's green panels, which are kind of national events that are taking place. So all the information is on the local enterprise office websites, and absolutely the place to go if you have a small business, you're looking at growing or expanding that business, or indeed if you have just that very early stage idea and you're not sure where to go with it. It could be in all areas around digitalization. It could be on looking at upgrading your website, your online offering. It could be just getting those mentoring on finance, on cybersecurity, whatever aspect you need. Bear in mind that the enterprise office has created over 8,000 roles, new roles across the country last year. And their mandate has now been expanded as well to include companies with up to 50 employees and with a turnover, I think it could be up to €10 million now. So huge opportunities there for Midlands businesses. And to join companies like Bevcraft, who at the top of the show you would have heard were featured in the Financial Times top 1,000 fastest growing companies in Europe for the second year in a row this year. And they started out from very simple beginnings in Mullingar and have grown into an absolutely massive cross-European organisation now too. So check out all those various resources and events on your local enterprise office website. And with that, that is bringing me to a close for tonight's show. I want to say a big thank you to all tonight's contributors, to Mervyn Graham from Zoosh Digital, who also featured on that Financial Times 1000 list of fastest growing companies. Again, another Midlands company doing amazing things. Thanks to Yasmin Al-Kershi there from All Pro Recruitment for pointing out some of the challenges that women face when it comes to the jobs market, indeed salary negotiations, and looking at how we might go about closing that gender pay gap. Thank you for listening as always. Stay safe, enjoy the rest of the week, and I'll talk to you all next Tuesday.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business. Midlands 101.